story is to Jesus' shoulder. Charlie was always trying to do it some different way. Whenever he invited me for coffee, it was never to one of those trendy spots downtown, but to a place that most would say had no character for drinking coffee, like the canteen in the parking lot on Margin Way, where the coffee came scalding hot in spongy styrofoam cups, or the seventh floor of the library over at USM, where the coffee poured from a vending machine just inside the double door next to the elevator. One time, he even asked me to meet him at the 7-Eleven on Congress. We had an hour-long conversation just standing right there by the coffee pot, next to the Drake's cakes and a case of warm breakfast burritos. And that was just coffee. There was the rest of Charlie to consider. Take the way he dressed, for example. I have no idea where he got his clothes. My guess is at Goodwill. Maybe that's not unusual, but what he wore was always slightly frayed, and it was always colorful. He might wear red polyester slacks with a tartan shirt one time, and the next he might have an old gray suit coat over a lime green shirt, so wrinkled you might think that was part of its design. Charlie would never say that he had a personal style, but I described him to himself one day as delightfully rumpled, and there was an icy gleam in his eye over that. And then there was the way he walked. He leaned back a tiny bit as if he was going under the world's highest limbo setting, and his greetings, "How's the day?" you might say, or "How did it feel when you got up this morning?" Whatever he asked, it was always a surprise, and always, it seemed, intended to cause you to think about things in a different way. But what was most unusual about Charlie was his questions. They could almost always be approached from two sides. At our most recent meeting, Charlie wanted to discuss mail. He opened the conversation by saying, "Is there anything more satisfying than that moment right before you drop a piece of mail into the mailbox? Check the address, check the stamp, open the lid, drop the mail, and clink! You're done. Voila! Another task completed." He stopped, paused, and looked into my eyes. "But then there's the rest of life with that next mail." I don't know anyone else who ever thought of things that way. Now, no one can do everything unconventionally. You still have to live somewhere, and you still have to eat, and unless you want to live in something like a yurt, on a Mongolian steppe or in a closet in an old abandoned house, and subsist on a diet of bark or stones, you have to figure out how to fit into the system, at least a little bit. So Charlie worked part-time at a trinket store selling painting paraphernalia to tourists. "I'm a scrimshaw man," he'd say enthusiastically. And he always had interesting ways to think about what he did there and to describe the type of people he met. "Do you know what it takes to talk the tourist talk?" he asked me one time. "Time," was his answer. He went into a long discourse about the different ways that could go. It wasn't that I waited for his calls, but I did look forward to them, mostly because I don't do things the way Charlie does them. And so when he called me last week and said, "To the donut cup," I was excited to go. What would he tell me? How would he want me to deal with it? It was a great spring day, and I was happy to be out from work. I had been to the donut cart on many occasions, and had always seen it as just that, a steel cart with a man standing inside, serving donuts and coffee through a small window. Thinking that the cart may be today's topic, I attempted to analyze it. It's rather unusual for a man to be standing inside a small tin cart, so small that he always looked unhappy and cramped, but the counterbalance to that was the beauty of the surroundings. And that, in turn, got me thinking further. Unlike all of the other places we had met, sandy parking lots, convenience stores, windowless cafeterias, this spot had a view. It was right up against Castle Bay with nothing ugly in sight, just an unobstructed view of the water and a few small islands. When I arrived at the donut cart, Charlie was already there. He looked a little more rumpled than usual, but no less colorful. Orange corduroy pants and a buttonless vest over a white t-shirt, and then another new view for me. His arms and his biceps down were exposed. He was so thin and white. As always, he started right in. "Sit," no, you don't just automatically say yes or no, but did you know that there is a prayer to the shoulder of Jesus? He flashed one of those little cards that people sometimes leave behind in phone booths or on tables at diners. All I could think about was not the answer to the question, but how it was a different type of question, quite different than, quick, what are the ingredients in a traditional civilian bouillabaisse? Or, I'm glad you're here, now let's talk about how it feels to stand all day long. Of course, I had no idea there was such a prayer as one to the shoulder wound of Jesus. But before I even had time to answer, he said, the shoulder wound, mon Dieu. And then, as he often would, Charlie went into an amalgam of thoughts and notions about the topic, telling me it might help if I thought of my own shoulder, its function, it being a joint attached to a socket secured by tendons, muscle, cartilage. Hammer it down, he said, with a great and heavy weight. Tear the flesh, boy. He speculated that if there was a prayer to Jesus' shoulder wound, there must also be a prayer to the holes in his hands and in his feet and to the whole lance in his side to ensure his death. But he didn't know for sure, and that didn't matter anyway, because what was most interesting about this prayer, he said, was that it was the result of an unrecorded suffering. What do you mean unrecorded, I asked. He flashed the card again. Someone named St. Bernard had a personal conversation with Christ after Christ died, and St. Bernard asked Christ what his greatest unrecorded suffering was. And of course, all I could think of was how St. Bernard asked unusual questions, just like Charlie. And then Charlie read a prayer that contained some of those very same words he used, like flesh and bones laid bare, and the crushing burden of a cross. He huffed and he sighed and he said, can you imagine all that? Unusual. A prayer to a wound. Yes, it's an unusual day. And then we just sat there for the longest time, silently, was unusual in itself. In the past, you could always have at least one addendum like, so, which route home will you take tonight, or, now tell me again about the day you were born. Instead, we just sat looking out at the beautiful scenery, the sun high overhead and the cool wind floating in off the water, the caustic donut cart brew, maybe serving some type of purpose, tempering the surroundings, I guess, in light of the shoulder wound and the suffering we were now supposed to consider. Finally, after quite a deliberation, Charlie said, with a great deal of levity, to Jesus' shoulder. To Jesus' shoulder, I replied. At least for that day right there, that was that.